Good morning. Thank you all for being here to take a day of silence and to join in an exploration of the Dharma. This morning we'll take a look at a case in the Mumon Kan. Mumon Kan is the first of the classical koan collections we work on in our curriculum here. We'll look at case number 12. Suigan calls Master. The case reads, "The priest Suigan calls Master to himself every day and answered himself, 'Yes.' Then he would say, 'Be aware,' and reply, 'Yes.' 'Don't be deceived by others.' 'No, no.'" And Mumon's comment, which he includes with each koan. "Old Suigan buys himself and sells himself. He brings forth lots of angel faces and demon masks and plays with them. Why? Look, one kind calls, one kind answers, one kind is aware, one kind will not be deceived by others. If you still cling to understanding, you're in trouble. If you try to imitate Suigan, your discernment is altogether that of a fox." And then Mumon adds a verse. "Students of the way do not know the truth. They only know their consciousness up to now. This is the source of endless birth and death. The fool calls it the original self." Suigan, whose Chinese name is Zhui Yan, is one of our teachers whose name we chant in the ancestral line. He was a disciple of Ganto, and that's Yento in Chinese, and therefore a Dharma descendant of Toksan, or Taishan, and a kind of cousin or maybe a nephew of Seppo, that's Shuifeng. He was a younger contemporary of Umon, or Yunmen, and that puts him in the late 9th century, towards the end of the great Tang era, sometimes called the Golden Age of Zen. Suigan's a remarkable master. Those of who have worked on case number 8 in the Hekigan Roku have seen his extraordinary debut as a teacher, in which he teaches an entire summer ango with three of the most eminent masters of the time in attendance. And not even the formidable Umon can fault him. At the time of this koan, he's well into his career. He had the reputation of being a very precise and exact taskmaster, but as we can see, he's also a bit of an eccentric. Every teacher has his own style. Some teachers called out questions and then answered them. But that was a little more didactic. It was as if they waited a moment to see if anyone in the assembly would answer, and if not, the teacher would answer for them. Umon, for example. "I don't ask about before the 15th of the month, but what about after the 15th? No one answered, and Umon answered for them. "Every day is a good day." The master of Lotus Flower Peak held up his staff and asked the assembly, "When the ancients arrived here, why didn't they stay here?" And again he answered, "Because it is of no use in everyday life." But Suigan doesn't wait. Instead, he performs a little one-man play, calling and answering himself. Keep in mind that koans are public cases, and that Suigan is doing this as a public demonstration of the Dharma, his Dharma, before all the assembled monks. And he does it every day, maybe more than once a day. For a teacher, the teaching is the practice is the teaching. There's no separation. So this demonstration, this teaching, is also Suigan's practice. Priest Suigan called Master to himself every day and answered himself, "Yes." And he would say, "Be aware." And reply, "Yes. Don't be deceived by others. No, no." Calling and answering. Calling and answering. What's that all about? Mahakasyapa calls to Ananda. "Ananda." Ananda answers, "Yes, sir." Mahakasyapa says, "Take down the flagpole from the gate." The national teacher calls three times to his attendant. Each time, the attendant answers. The national teacher says, "I thought I had transgressed against you, but you too have transgressed against me." Calling and answering. The Buddha holds up a flower. "Is this calling?" Mahakasyapa smiles. "Is this answering? Who is it that calls? Who is it that answers? Are they the same? Are they different?" "Master, yes." In case number 10 in the Mumonkan, a monk named Seizei said to Master Sozan, "I am poor and alone. I beg you, Master, to please make me rich." Sozan said, "Venerable Seizei." "Yes, Master," replied Seizei. Sozan said, "You have already drunk three cups of the finest wine of China, but still you say that your lips are not yet moistened." Seizei calls, "I am poor and alone. Please make me rich." Sozan cries out, "Venerable Seizei." Is that his answer? Or is he calling to Seizei? And Seizei answers, "Yes, Master." Or is he calling again? A monk calls out to Joshu, "Does a dog have the Buddha nature?" And Joshu answers, "Moo." When we sit and breathe, "No," or "One," or even just sit, is that calling? And if so, what is the answer? At the Rochester Sen Center, on the last night or two of Sesshin, they have loud mooing. We've tried it at least once here. Towards the end of the evening sitting on the fifth or sixth night, the densho is struck and everyone in the zendo starts to voice moo. Very quietly at first, and then louder and louder and louder, until at full volume, the whole building, and probably the neighborhood, resounds with moo. This is a way of rousing the energy for a night of sitting. And it helps to clarify mu for those who are working on it. But it's something else as well. It's a calling. A calling of one lost and alone. It's Seizei calling to Sozan. The monk calling to Joshu. A calling so intense and so heartfelt that body and mind drop away. Caller disappears, and there is only a monk who had studied under Zuigan brought this matter of Zuigan's calling and answering up with Master Gensha. Gensha asked him, "Why didn't you stay longer with him and continue your training?" The monk replied, "Master Zuigan died." Gensha asked, "If you call out to him now, 'Oh, Master,' will he answer?" The monk could not reply. If there is no calling, there can be no answer. If we just sit and passively recite mu to ourselves without the inquiring mind, without the calling, this is not zazen. Mu is no longer a koan, but a kind of mantra, something like what they do in the Pure Land sect, where it's considered enough to just recite Namo Amida Butsu over and over and over again. That's not our practice. It's the calling, the questioning, that keeps our zazen alive. This doesn't mean we have to shout or huff and puff, although that certainly happens sometimes. It's this calling, this questioning, that goes deeper and deeper with continued practice until it becomes embedded in our innermost being. And more, that mind, the mind that questions, the mind that does not know, becomes the mind which abides nowhere. Every day, Zuigan calls and answers, maybe more than once a day. Is he repeating himself? Does this get to be an old familiar routine? When you breathe mu, is it the same mu every time, or is it different? Every moment, every mu, every one, every, oh master, is brand new. Never seen before, never to be seen again. And it's us. This moment, right now, is each of us, whole and complete, just as it is, just as we are. How wonderful. Each moment of walking in Kinhin, or walking down the street, or walking around our house or at work, equally wonderful. Zuigan is with us right now, with his calling, and his answering. Mumon's commentary. Old Zuigan buys himself and sells himself. He brings forth lots of angel faces and demon masks and plays with them. Why? Look. One kind calls, one kind answers. One kind is aware, one kind will not be deceived by others. If you still cling to understanding, you're in trouble. If you try to imitate Zuigan, your discernment is altogether that of a fox. Yes, Zuigan has a lot of masks of goblins and demons and saints to play with. Well, don't we all? We wear masks all the time. The mask of the employee, the boss, the husband or wife, the cook, the driver, the bicyclist, the friend, the parent. Here in the Zendo, of course, we're all wearing our Zen masks. And that's appropriate. You don't behave in the Zendo the way you would at a football game. And vice versa. Can you imagine some dude sitting in the south stands during a Raiders game doing zazen? Some of those guys would probably just dump beer over your head and throw you out of there. And they would be right. Masks are okay, as long as we don't attach to them. Being attached to a mask or a persona, that's death. It's very easy to get stuck in a mask. The mask of man, woman, the biology teacher who knows everything, naturally, an engineer, a good person, a bad person, and most pernicious of all, the mask of enlightenment. The great mime, Marcel Marceau, had a routine in which his character, Mr. Bip, finds the two masks of comedy, of drama, rather, comedy and tragedy. He puts on one and then the other more and more quickly. Of course, what he really does is pass his hands over his face. And each time the hand passes, his face changes instantly from one to another, from this big grin to a scowl of sorrow. The lightning changes that Marceau makes in his face faster and faster is absolutely incredible. Then suddenly the comedy mask gets stuck on his face. He tries to pull it off, but it won't come. And there he is, with this huge grin on his face, while his body shows more and more agitation as he tries to pull it off. Of course, at first the effect is very funny. But then it becomes something else, a little bit disturbing, maybe even grotesque and frightening. When I saw this, it was on television on the old Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and the audience laughed louder and louder, and then the laughter died away. And at that point, he finally gets hold of the mask, and gradually, with a great struggle, he manages to pull it off, to reveal beneath it agony. A few years ago, a very talented young actor named River Phoenix was found dead of a drug overdose. His friends and associates were astounded because he'd put forth this image of totally pure living. He was a strict vegetarian and refused even to wear leather. Yet under that mask was the unimaginable suffering of the addict. There's a saying among recovering addicts, it's not the drugs that kill you, it's the denial, the mask. We mustn't get stuck in our masks. Zuigan never gets stuck. He shifts his masks like quicksilver, utterly unfettered. Which one is the real Zuigan? The one that calls? The one that answers? The one who won't be deceived? Is any of them the real Zuigan? Each one is the real Zuigan at that moment. We're like that. When I'm an anatomy teacher, I'm an anatomy teacher. When I wash dishes, I'm a dishwasher. I'm a dishwasher, totally. Through and through, nothing else. When I mow the lawn, I'm a lawnmower, totally. Nothing else. The one who calls, the one who answers, the one who cleans the bathrooms. It's a continuing process of discovery of who and what we are that is at the root of mindfulness practice. In the Shila Anga, we're devoting ourselves to this process of discovery in our daily lives, as well as in our zazen on the mat. Sometimes we get the idea that if we do lots of zazen, go to a lot of sesshin, work on lots of koans, then at some point we get to say, aha, this is who and what I truly am. And that's the end of it, sort of one big one-shot deal. Not so. There is no end point. There is a lessening of the struggle. We become more and more comfortable with this impermanence, the constant change. And then not just comfortable, but fascinated, even joyous, over the continuing process. Each moment is a discovery of who and what we are, moment by moment by moment. But there's a catch. We have to give ourselves up totally and completely to each moment, to the impermanence. There can be nothing held back. No little piece of a static, fixed self off in a corner where we hope it won't be noticed. 100% combustion of each moment. That's Zuigan, flowing from one mask to the next. That's it. If we don't attach to our masks, they're not really masks. How can there be masks? It's just who we are at that moment. But Mumon warns us, if you still cling to understanding, you're in trouble. Oh boy, I could be in big trouble right now. No, words and concepts won't do it. In his comment on case number 9 in the Mumon Kan, Master Mumon writes, I approve the old barbarian's realization, but I don't approve his understanding. He's referring to Bodhidharma in another context. He goes on, if an ordinary person realizes, he or she is thus a sage. If a sage understands, he or she is thus an ordinary person. Does anyone remain a sage? Does anyone remain an ordinary person? Or are these just more masks? Sage, ordinary person, Buddha's sentient being. We need both. We are both. The noetic side, to know and to know that you know, and the realization in great action work together. They reinforce each other. After all, if it were not for their deep and precise understanding of the Dharma and their ability to communicate, we would not have the teachings of Rinzai or Obaku or Dogen or the Buddha himself to guide us. To say nothing of Philip Kaplow Roshi, Robert Aiken Roshi, or Danan Henry Sensei. A finger pointing to the moon is not the moon, but it can be an enormously important guide. It is the one-sided clinging that gets us into trouble. To stay with an intellectual understanding doesn't work until it is realized, made real in this world of time and space and phenomena. It has not functioned. There was a monastery, I think it was a Monastery Without Walls meeting a month or so ago, and Karen Kemp, who's an old Rochester hand, mentioned something that Bowden Colheed, who's the current abbot of the Rochester Zen Center, is saying. He said, there are no enlightened people, only enlightened actions. I thought that was a wonderful way to put it. If you try to imitate Zuigun, your discernment is altogether that of a fox. We have to remember here that in Asian mythology, the fox is looked at as not just being clever, but as a genuinely sinister character. He's a cheat and a scoundrel. So this is another warning. In case 3 in the Mumon Kan, whenever Master Gutei was asked a question, he would raise his finger. He had this young attendant, a young boy, who got into the habit of imitating him, raising his finger, imitating the master. So the master took a knife and cut off a finger. Now, I suspect this is one of those apocryphal stories not to be taken too literally. It's hard to imagine Zen masters carrying knives around, you know, ready to cut off fingers or kill cats or whatever. But it doesn't really matter. In our own practice, we have to cut off all these imitating fingers time and time again. All those notions about enlightenment, how an enlightened person is supposed to look or behave or be. Philip Kaplow Roshi used to remark on this business of sitting there and trying to make like a Buddha. Keizan, in one of his commentaries in the Denko Roku, writes, among humans and animals, it is provisionally called Buddha, or it is called demons or animals. It is as if many faces were temporarily displayed on one face. But if you think that it is a Buddha's face, that's wrong. If you think that it is a demon's face, that is also wrong. No, don't think of it as anything. Don't try to imitate a Buddha or a demon or Zuigan or Gute or anybody or anything. Just do the practice. Do it thoroughly. Do it honestly. Mumon's verse. Students of the way do not know the truth. They only know their consciousness up to now. This is the source of endless birth and death. The fool calls it the original self. Actually, this isn't Mumon's verse. This is Mumon's quoting a verse by Chosa, who lived around 200 years before. But it certainly matches this koan perfectly. To call anything the original self is delusion. We have this innate desire to find a self, or create one, something nice and comfortable to settle into that is me and me alone. If we don't find it in things, possessions, relationships, we look to our minds, our thoughts, images, speculations about past, present, and future. We make assumptions about some kind of certain thing or state of being that is us. We want so badly to stay asleep. Even for those who have awakened to some extent, that desire to go back to sleep, to curl up in the cocoon of an enduring self, is very powerful. But that conscious mind, that mind that loves, hates, decides, dreams, and schemes, is, as Robert Aitken Roshi warns us, the very ocean of birth and death itself. Now, when Joshu asked Nansen, "What is the Tao? What is the way?" Nansen said, "Ordinary mind is the Tao." And yet Mumon seems to contradict that. Isn't that our conscious mind? What is it that can turn the ordinary mind, the Tao, into the deepest delusion, or vice versa? Well, Joshu continues and asks, "Should I try to direct myself toward it?" Nansen replies, "If you try to direct yourself, you betray your own practice." There it is. To try to direct yourself toward it, to chase after it, to make assumptions about it, to call it by any name whatsoever, to attach to it, is to go away from the practice and lose it. Only by letting go, surrendering completely to the practice, does one attain it. Except, of course, it's not a matter of attainment. One just sees that it has always been there. Lex Hickson, in his unconventional book entitled Living Buddha Zen, writes, "True not knowing is infinite. It is not comparable to any ordinary condition of not knowing some information or not perceiving some object. True not knowing, though faceless, can manifest any face. It has no particular way to be, no mark by which it can be recognized. It is always simply us, our own most intimate awareness." Yes, the key is awareness. Attachment, chasing, seeking is blindness, a loss of awareness, a limiting of ourselves. The only way we can be aware, truly aware, is by letting go of everything, letting go of our hold on the cliff, trusting the practice completely and unconditionally as a child trusts its mother. And that is when we discover what we are, something unimaginable, unnameable, everywhere and nowhere, not old, not young, but timeless. And when we call Zuigan, "O Master," he will answer. Together with all beings, we attain Buddhahood.